KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Mission District.
Fremont.
El Cerrito.
O-Town, baby.
Lake Merritt.
Temescal.
Tenderloin.
Treasure Island.
Richmond, California.
Coming up, we meet an inmate at San Quentin who's traded his magazines for law books.
As I started studying law, I realized nobody knows my case like me. And nobody's gonna work this hard to get me out.
Then we hear from a choreographer who's created his dream team of dancers.
Is this a queer company? Is it an Asian American company? Is it some sort of melding of the two? And right now it's the melding of the two, which is so satisfying to me.
And a mother and daughter bond over their love of food in the StoryCorps booth.
I have feeling that I was cooking inside my mother's belly.
We're talking about origin stories today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. You can't practice law while serving time in prison. But at San Quentin, there are inmates who represent themselves and offer legal assistance to other inmates. Now, you won't find any of them with law degrees, but what you will find are men who have a passion for fighting for their freedom and the freedom of their fellow inmates. They're the subject of a story today from San Quentin Radio.
San Quentin Radio, bringing you informative educational stories from the inside out.
In order to make something grow, you gotta own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
Because I like to be free, I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop, and all of a sudden you heard this.
From San Quentin Radio, Greg Eskridge reports on jailhouse lawyers.
I'm Philip Morris, a jailhouse lawyer. I've been litigating criminal and civil law since 1994.
I'm Noel Scott. People consider me to be a jailhouse attorney because I've been filing petitions in the California state courts for over 20 years.
My name is Forrest Jones. I am a jailhouse lawyer, and I have been litigating for the past 24 years.
My name is Rasan Thomas, and I became a jailhouse lawyer because I didn't have a choice.
Those are just a few of the jailhouse lawyers who practice here in San Quentin. Rasan Thomas takes us the rest of the way with his personal experience as a prison litigator.
A state-appointed attorney only takes you so far, and without the money to hire anybody else, it was either forfeit my remaining chances at freedom or learn to fight for myself. I chose to fight for myself.
The state provides you with an attorney for one appeal. If you are denied and want to take the appeal process further, you have to hire an attorney or write a writ, which is a legal document that presents the issues that you are raising and file it on your own.
It's like a shot clock. And as long as you're in motion, this clock stops. But the second you stop moving, the clock starts ticking again. And if you let 1 year run out, that's it.
Under federal law, you have 1 year to figure out how to present claims in federal court and start the process. So Rasan has to spend as much time in the library as he can.
And in that year, you have to learn how to be a lawyer. And you have to do it from a level 4 prison that my first damn near 8 months was on lockdown. So I'm getting maybe 2 or 3 trips to the law library in 8 months. And these trips to the law library are like an hour, hour and a half long.
California law states that inmates are required to have 4 hours a week of access to the law library. However, if the institution goes on lockdown, access to the law library becomes limited to only those who have a 30-day deadline to meet.
So what happens is, to even go to the law library at all, you have to sign up for an appointment. And what you do is you pull out a form, and I would do one every night, every single night. I just harass the law library. And you send the form in through the institutional mail, and you wait for them to send you a ducket back that'll allow you to be transported in handcuffs from B yard to A yard, which we share the law library with.
A ducket is a pass that allows an inmate access to a place within the prison at a specific time and date.
Excuse me, can I get some help?
Sure, what do you need?
I need some books. I need the book that has Montgomery versus Louisiana. I also need CalJUR instructions.
Rasan is checking out books inside the law library. But these books cannot be taken back to his cell, so he must get the information he needs within the allotted time there.
What it takes to be a jailhouse lawyer is tenacity and focus. Like me, fell out a law library slip every single day and just keep sending it in and not give up, no matter how frustrating it is or how difficult it is.
Prison law libraries often don't have up-to-date books. Sometimes pages are missing, someone else may be using the only copy, and there often isn't enough time for Rasan to read about everything he needs to learn.
I realized I had subscriptions to Blackmail Magazine and Smooth Girl, but I didn't have any of my own law books, and I was relying on a law library system that was flawed. So I had to start sacrificing. I decided to not get a package of food or not get magazines and buy this $265 law book.
For Rahsaan, getting the books was just the first step. He then had to figure out what all these new legal terms meant.
It was intimidating. It felt like, can I do this? But I just kept studying and studying and studying, and the law is like spread out. It's not in one book. You're not gonna read one book and understand law, right? You have to learn a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here. And then once you learn this little bit here, you go back over here, and now this makes more sense to you. And it just started coming to me.
His cell became the law library.
And I had all the great books, CB, Appeals and Writs, Criminal Practice and Procedures, Hertz and Lieberman, Federal Practice and Procedures. So I had like all the best law books in my cell, and I had more up-to-date books than the law library had. So it became my life.
It took him about 2 years to get all the books he needed. Then he started putting them to use.
When I filed my first writ, I was insecure. I thought that the more claims that you file, the better your chances. But it actually worsens your chances because it makes the writ big and thick, and that makes work for some clerk somewhere, some judge somewhere, and big, thick writs don't get read. Ultimately, I found failure by doing that, and I found success for others by just filing short, powerful writs to the point with one or two strong claims.
Rahsaan has filed several writs for himself and others. However, he wasn't granted the relief he sought, but the success came in getting the courts to look at the case. His reputation for success spread around the yard, and he was soon sought out by inmates seeking help for themselves.
At first, I didn't want to help people with their legal cases because I didn't want to be responsible for somebody else's freedom.
But in 2005, Rahsaan got a job at the law library.
People would ask me questions. I would give them the book that would show them the answer, and they would come back with the same question. And I realized they don't comprehend. And even though all I had was a high school diploma, all they had was me. And I couldn't just let them fail because nobody should stay in jail because they can't read or write. I had to help them.
San Quentin Yard is usually populated with about 200 prisoners exercising and going about their day. This is normally when Rahsaan, or also known as New York, is approached by those seeking help. One person that came to Rahsaan is Anthony Ammons.
At New York, my name is Anthony Ammons. Been incarcerated since I was 16 years old for a first-degree murder that I committed. I received 102 years to life. Rahsaan has helped me in ways that attorneys didn't want to. I've wrote attorneys, over 100 attorneys, letting them know of my case, and half of them don't even write back. But he's helped me to get answers from the court. He's helped me to change the way I think about the justice system. You know what I mean? Seeing him fight for me at no cost is a blessing.
Anthony Ammons was one of Rahsaan's first clients here at San Quentin. Rahsaan has gotten a court to look at his claim, and the case is still pending.
When somebody asks me to handle their case, the first thing I try to figure out is it too late? So I ask them what stage they're at. If there's still time, then I ask for all their paperwork. So I want to read everything, the transcripts, everything. Once I identify the strongest issues, I write the writ up by hand. Then I type it out. I give it to them. They file it, and then we pray, waiting for a response.
Rahsaan has gotten a lot of people back in courts, but he hasn't gotten anybody out of jail yet.
I keep fighting because I feel like sooner or later they're going to get the right judge, the right lawyer, the right combination of factors and walk out those doors, but it's bigger than that. Just having something in the courts provides hope.
And that hope represents a chance that something good may happen in their favor, such as an order to show cause.
An order to show cause means that the court is going to take a look at your case. They're going to give you a lawyer. When you get that, you're like, yeah, I got an order to show cause. I got something here. And it gets us through our time easier than just sitting around knowing you're doomed. Being a jailhouse lawyer means you're the guy that everybody's going to come to and talk your ears off, because everybody's going to come tell you about their case all day, every day. But for the most part, I think we represent hope and it's respect. So you're not allowed to be paid to be a jailhouse lawyer. So they know you're trying to help them from your heart. Whereas a lawyer in the street, it's about the money. Your money run out, your help run out.
Over the years, Rahsaan has become well-versed in the law. He has helped over 30 people, many of which have been brought back to court and appointed lawyers. He continues to fight to overturn his own conviction. It seems to be an uphill battle for him, but yet he vows to never give up.
I feel like there's a hope to it. there's a hope, because when you have a 55 to life sentence, you're not going home, period. 55 to life means you're doing 55 years. But as long as you got a writ in somewhere, it gives you some kind of beacon of hope.
From San Quentin Prison Report, I'm Greg Eskridge.
Rahsaan Thomas is currently working with Anthony Ammons on a case, and Ammons has been in court since last week. If you'd like to hear more stories reported from inside San Quentin, go to our website, kalw.org, and click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. When Jesalito Bai co-founded Steamroller Dance Company over 20 years ago, he wanted to create performances that address the spread of HIV/AIDS. Since then, Steamroller has performed all over the Bay Area, addressing experiences of marginalized people through dance. This year, the company's performing Siamese Dream, a dance production that combines the Hollywood glamour of the musical The King and I with the physicality of kung fu movies to create a critical fantasia of Asian Americana. Bai sat down for a conversation with KALW's Jen Chien about the past and present of his work. And a note, Jen has been a dancer with Steamroller in the past.
It's interesting to me, your work does often deal with issues of being queer, issues of Asian American, API identity, not always, but that's definitely a huge part of your point of view as an artist.
Yeah.
So what does it mean to you when the cast of dancers that you're working with is more of one or more of the other? It sounds like it does make a difference, but what does that mean for you?
I guess in the creative process, there's more of a, it's an easier flow. It's like, oh, we're speaking about the same thing. So when I bring
some... When you share kind of identity characteristics with each other.
Yeah, it's like when I come in with something, it's like, I want to talk about this, then I get this from people, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about, let's try this. Like, they'll present something to me that I hadn't seen, which is just great, you know, because after 30-some-odd years of doing this, like, I'm so fed up with my perspective. It's so boring to me. So to come in and like have people say, oh, what if we try this? Or did you ever think about this perspective? That is just, it's enriching. It's like, I'm getting an education and I also feel like I'm passing something on. It's sort of over the course of the years, it's sort of gone back and forth. It's like, is this a queer company? Is it an Asian American company? Is it some sort of melding of the two? And right now it's the melding of the two, which is so satisfying to me. It's like, oh, finally, you know, because it's kind of gone back and forth as, you know, people were available.
Meaning either or. And now you feel like it's both.
Yeah, and that's so pleasing. I don't know what happened, but it's not entirely queer, but mostly queer Asian American. And again, it's like, wow.
Let's talk about Siamese Dream, which is the show that you're doing in the San Francisco International Arts Festival, and it's a revival of a show that originally was performed 20 years ago?
20 years ago. God.
Where did the idea for the show come from originally? Explain it for people who aren't familiar.
Well, the inspiration came from, I was with my husband at the time, and we'd rented a VHS tape, that's how old this is, of The King and I. And I was just so taken, I hadn't seen it since I was a child. And just seeing something like these classic Hollywood movies that were so grand and just so big, but then also realizing, wow, this is incredibly racist, you know, like that sort of spies, like, well, this would be interesting to do and to contemporize.
And The King and I, to explain, if people aren't familiar with it, maybe tell the story a little bit.
The King and I, it's a musical.
Rodgers and Hammerstein, right?
Yes, thank you. Classic. The story is of a English governess who is brought to Siam, again, like dating myself, to be the governess of the king's children.
What's now known as Thailand.
Yes. And, you know, it's just this very, like, stately English woman in, like, the barbaric, you know, like, culture of Siam or Thailand. And the conflict that arises And there is this one iconic scene for me, it's iconic, where one of the king's wives does a restaging of Uncle Tom's Cabin, but with all these like Asian tropes. And it's just so satisfying because it's...
Talk about problematic.
Right? Yeah, it's so gratifying, you know, because they really bring in these signifiers like, oh, this is Asian. But, you know, they do it so well. It's like, well, okay, I can't fault them for doing it. But also you're watching, it's like, oh, the Thai wife of the king is played by Rita Moreno. It's like, my mind is blown. And then I had also watched this amazingly just off the hook kung fu movie called Swordsman 2. Just wire work and just amazing, amazing choreographed fight scenes. And the character, one of the characters or the villain in the movie is played, he gets these amazing supernatural powers because he pretends to be a woman. It's like, oh my God, talk about really like mixing things up. So, and just like, wow, I love the physicality. What would happen if we mash these things up? Like something that is more sort of authentically Asian with something that is inauthentic. And I had like brought all the dancers to watch it, and they're like, oh, this is great. Why don't we do this? I'd love to do this again and again, because it's such a delightful piece to me, because you can come into it in a number of different ways as someone who likes dance, as someone who wants to have the entertainment value, or the Asian American angle. It's like, oh, well, they're talking about being Asian American, great, or being queer and Asian American. Like, what are the confluences of those two identities? So I think it's accessible on many different levels. And, you know, just as someone who has been around for like 20, 30 years, like you can say, oh, I remember going to see this back in the 90s. I'm old. But, you know, just to say, oh, you know, this has been around for a while, and that this is historical on some level.
I'm speaking with dancer and choreographer Jesalito Bai, director of Steamroller Dance Company. Do you feel differently about making a piece that's talking about Asian API identity and queer identity now versus 20 years ago in terms of where the culture itself has gone?
Yeah.
Visibility and
I guess I'm
what you might call normalization. I don't know.
I'm less militant about it. It's like, well, you know, like there's sort of more of an integration. So I have to talk about it from that perspective. Like, well, you know, we're not sort of on the margins, but we are in the margins. You know, like that sort of like that incipient racism that is just always under the surface that we all, like as Asians, we suffer, that, you know, people are like, well, they won't mind it, you know, because it's not that bad. Well, it is bad when you do it 1,000 times. A production I'm working on, it's like, well, you have these people of color, but you're using them as props. You don't actually know why you're using them. You're asking them to do things that are traditional, in quotes. It's like, well, you don't even know what that means. And they don't know what that means because they weren't trained in that style.
It's sort of analogous to asking an Asian American actor to put on an accent that
yes.
they don't actually have.
Exactly.
This is like putting on a cultural dance accent.
Right, right. It's like yellow face for dance.
What do you hope for Steamroller going forward?
I would love to continue with this, you know, like expansiveness of like, oh, well, for a long time, I resisted that sort of being tied to, oh, you're an Asian American dance company. But now it's kind of like, that's great, you know, because I remember one time I had gone to, it was a workshop about dance and race. And I was talking to someone, a colleague, and he said, oh, yeah, I remember when Steamroller would come into like dance functions and he would say, oh, there's the gang. It's like, well, what does that mean? It's like, oh, because you're all, it's because we were all Asian at the time. It's like, again, I get at some, like when I was younger, I would have been offended because, oh, you're pigeonholing me because we're all Asian. But now I actually think that's a great thing, you know, because you don't see that sort of uniform or cohesiveness or like that representation. It's like, oh, they're all Asian. Yes, we are. But, you know, we're not that, you know, we're not polite. You know, we stand out because we're queer, we embrace it, we're, you know, we're outspoken, again, embracing that. It's like, if you're going to talk to us, you're going to get an earful of who we are, and it may not just be about us being Asian, it may be all sorts of things, but we're not, definitely not going to be polite.
Thank you.
That was dancer and choreographer Jesalito Bai. He'll be performing in the 20th anniversary production of Siamese Dream with the Steamroller Dance Company. That's part of the San Francisco International Arts Festival this weekend. To learn more about that, go to klw.org, click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba, and now it's time for your stories. This is San Francisco StoryCorps. Maritza Hurtado Torres has been cooking for as long as she can remember. Her daughter, Cheryl Bonilla, has been eating that food her whole life. At the StoryCorps booth in San Francisco, they talk about how their bond has grown over the backdrop of Torres's Colombian cuisine.
Mi nombre es Maritza Hurtado. Mi edad es 47 años.
My name is Cheryl. I am 24 years old today.
Ask me everything you want, Cheryl.
Okay. I just want to start off where are you from?
Colombia.
Oh, that's
the
a
best
beautiful country.
Yes,
yes it is, very much so.
I studied for to be a chef. Yes.
Oh, yes. Your cooking is very delicious.
I know that. And you know, maybe you don't know, but I'm cooking. I just started cooking when I was 7 years old. I do everything for my house, for my man, for birthdays, party, Christmas. It was so fun when I cook. All my neighbors want to eat my food.
I know I get asked this a lot, you know, what's my favorite dish? I have many dishes, but, you know, one of my favorites is, I like her enchiladas, yes. Chicken enchiladas.
Oh my gosh.
Excuse me, it's my turn right now. It's really delicious, you know, knowing that, in Colombia, they don't know anything about enchiladas. So for someone that's not Mexican doing it, it's really good. A lot of people say. And another dish she has is a stuffed chicken, boneless stuffed chicken. And it's whole, you know. She debones it, stuffs it in with rice and chicken and vegetables. So, you know. And I eat gourmet food almost every day.
I have feeling that I was cooking inside my mother's belly.
Yes.
Because I love to cook. I love to cook for people, not for the money. I just like to do it.
It's her passion.
I enjoy to cook. It's my passion. Do you know how to cook?
A little bit. I can defend myself just a little bit, you know.
Well, in the kitchen.
You have to say the truth.
I do say the truth. Well. You know. I one time I did cook, and everybody thought it was my mom's dish, and they realized it was mine. So I felt special that day. You know, I have some potential, but until I don't move out, that will not happen yet.
We have a good time. We have happy family, and I enjoy to stay with Cheryl. We have every week, we have a day together. We going to...
It's my day off on Thursday, so yes. It's mother-daughter day.
Yes.
Every Thursday.
We love it because we can talk about men's.
We could talk about a lot of stuff during breakfast. Because then after that, the hours just go by very quick until I have school at night. It's the best time. We just wake up. We're going to say we're going to go somewhere. That's our quest, too. That's our quest. Try to see if we could go to all the restaurants in San Francisco.
Oh yes, because I love to go eat outside.
Yes.
I love to go eat outside.
I am very happy to have you as a mother.
I'm so proud to be you, man. And I want you to be my friend forever.
Yes, we're going to be living next door.
I love you, mommy.
Me too.
That was Maritza Hurtado Torres speaking with her daughter, Cheryl Bonilla, inside the San Francisco StoryCorps booth. That story was produced by Greer McVeigh, who is a current fellow in our Audio Academy training program. If you're interested in recording your own family story for StoryCorps, find that information about the San Francisco location at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's it for Cross Currents today. Our team includes Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Jeremy Jew, Lisa Morehouse, James Rollins, Judy Silber, Stephen Short, Carrie Spivak, and Andrew Seltzer. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff, and the line producer was Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Keyless and Cloud of San Francisco. They are on a national tour, and they'll be at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley on Friday. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
I left the heat of Arizona, shook the highway, a feather in the wind. I saw the rise of Santa Fe burn in my eyes. In my eyes, I saw the rise of Santa Fe. Shake me now. I am falling, I'm a feather in the wind. Take me now. Falling.